So today I want to try to give a small summary, a small outline of the basic ideas of the Abhidhamma. Now, the Abhidhamma is basically built up on two things. One is the basic ideas of the system, the basic ideas of the Abhidhamma, and the second is the relations between these things, between the basics. So one can almost think of this in matters of the basic ideas of the Abhidhamma are something like the vocabulary of insight or the vocabulary of Buddhist philosophy, while the relations between these will be something like the grammar of insight or the grammar of Buddhist philosophy. So let us start off by enumerating what are the basic items of the Abhidhamma. Now, in Abhidhamma philosophy, there are four ultimate truths, we can say. Four ultimate things, four paramatta in Pali, four things that are of ultimate relevance for a discussion on the nature of reality, for a discussion on the path to enlightenment and the path of liberation from the world and from worldliness. And these four are, first is matter in Pali, rupa. The second one is mind in Pali, citta. The third one is consciousness in Pali, vijnana. And the fourth one is nibbana, or the more common word is nirvana, which is a Sanskrit term, which stands for the element of liberation from worldliness and which stands for enlightenment. So these four, I hope the listener will try to remember: matter, mind, consciousness, and nirvana or nirvana. So then let us explore each of them and explain what they mean. So the first one, rupa, matter, in Abhidhamma refers to basically two things. The first one is what usually can be attributed to, if you want to understand it in modern terms, we can say it refers to what we usually call inorganic matter, and that is understood in matters of four primary elements, which are earth, water, fire, and air. So I have given a talk about this four elements, and I've written a small booklet about them, so I don't want to spend too much time in explaining about them here. So just important for a modern person is perhaps to understand that these four elements are to a certain extent the ancient representation of those elements that we learn about in modern times in the periodic table of the elements. Well, these were the first classification of matter, and for that of inorganic matter. So that is the first aspect of rupa, the first aspect of matter. The second aspect of matter is the material elements that make up the body. So things like the senses, or the matter that makes up our senses, the material that acts as a proper base for our mind, which in modern times we would generally think of as a brain, but which in ancient times usually was thought of as being the heart. But in more refined terms, combining things modern and ancient, we can say perhaps that both the brain and the spinal column and the endocrine glands, they are the material basis which allows the mind to function in the material world and function through the body. And yet other aspect will be the life faculty of the body. So I don't want to mention all the details in regard to this system. I think that is just enough for a summary of the subject matter. So these are the basics of what constitutes matter. Then the next will be mind, citta. So the mind refers to mental states primarily. It refers to things like greed, anger, joy, happiness, intelligence, bravery, crookedness, fear, objectivity, and so on. Now, mind in Buddhism refers for the most part to mental states, and maybe to a lesser degree, I would say, to what these states are made up of. So each mental state is also made up of various things, like perception, like feeling, like thought. And these all come under this heading of the mind. And actually more I don't really want to say about the mind or citta in that respect. So I will just go on to the third, which is consciousness, vijnana. Now, consciousness in Buddhism is a bit of a tricky thing, because it is actually what overlaps the most with what in other religions are called or considered to be the self. So now in Buddhism we have a model of a mental process. So in Buddhism, consciousness is not one solid thing, but is more conceived of as something like a stream that flows on but perpetually changes. However, that is only one aspect of thinking about it, one aspect of conceiving about it. So consciousness in Buddhism or in Abhidhamma philosophy, in a sense, includes that which moves on from one life to the next. It is, in a sense, it is something that exists beyond a single life. It is an explanation, or it includes an attempt of explaining how the karma can operate over various lives and can have an effect on future lives. So actually the modern conception of conscious mind and unconscious mind is a very good clue of how the ancients were thinking about consciousness. Because in Buddhism you also have something like an unconscious mind, but which in Buddhism is still thought to contain a certain amount of minimal consciousness, a certain substrate consciousness. And now that is, in Pali it is called Bhavanga, which translates literally as something like that wherein existence is rooted. So it is a ground of consciousness. It is a kind of ground from where consciousness arises. But in Buddhist terms, it's still conceived to be part of the aggregate of consciousness. So the ancients had quite a detailed conception of how the conscious mind, what we in modern times would call the conscious mind and the unconscious mind, how these two relate to each other. So how the conscious mind would arise from that substrate consciousness and arise to some amount of activity. For example, in the conditions like dreams, that will be the first stirring of this substrate consciousness, which in modern times we would call the subconscious mind, which is between the unconscious mind and the conscious mind. And this is the condition of consciousness, for example, in dreams. And from this vibrating ground consciousness, from this vibrating simple consciousness, the mind slowly would grow into greater and greater consciousness. So one of the first things that will occur when consciousness becomes more conscious, we can say, can be observed when we wake up in the morning. So gradually we receive impressions, we receive the alarm clock of the clock, or we receive the sunlight with our eyes. Now that will be one of the first things that happen when consciousness becomes aware, when consciousness grows into greater consciousness. And when we receive impressions, then slowly we might investigate the impressions. If our mind is not very clear yet, we clear the mind and we investigate what is it that we are aware of now. What is that sound? What is that light? Etc. So that will be the second step in the awakening of consciousness. And then the third step will be the mind or the consciousness uses a designation. It declares, okay, this is light, this is sound, this is a threat, this is not a threat, so this is nothing to worry about, or this is something to worry about, etc. And when the mind or consciousness found a certain designation for what it contacts, what it receives, what it is aware of, then after some time it begins to think about it. So if it becomes aware of the light in the morning after waking up, then it starts to think about it. Oh, the light is very bright, that means it must be already 9 o'clock, so I must rush to get certain things done, etc. Certain thought processes begin to arise based on what one has designated to be out there, based on what one has decided to be out there. And within this process of thinking, the mind will develop intentions. So it will start to make decisions, and it will develop intentions for the future. It will develop intentions as to how to cope with the approaching future. So the process of thinking involves comparing and relating what one perceives at the present moment, not what one designated at the present moment as being light, etc., as being morning, as being 9 o'clock, etc., relating that to past impressions, relating that to ideas that one developed in the past. So a human being is a being which throughout life, ideally, an intelligent person, a human being is a being which throughout life develops ideas and refines ideas, ideally. So now that is part of being human, to continuously work on and think about ideas and to relate present impressions, present experiences to the ideas that one already has evolved. Now, be it about life, be it about oneself, be it about the future, be it about the past. Now, all that usually is contained in the mind. And that is all the time modified and related to what is present now in front of the senses. And based on this process of relating present conditions to ideas that one has about the past, about life, about the future, about oneself, one makes intentions. And these intentions are actually what constitutes karma. Now, these are the main modifying factors that modify the future, not that gear the present into the future or into a future. So, and now once the mind has made a decision or set an intention for the future, then usually this process drops again into the state of bhavanga, into the state of unconsciousness or subconsciousness. So now this is clearly a process which Buddhist philosophers kind of evolved as an alternative to a permanent self. So when the mind kind of drops again into this condition of unconsciousness, this condition of unconsciousness contains kind of potential seeds, that kind of contains the potency of karma, which continue to exist in a state of unmanifest potential. So you have this kind of dynamic of a conscious mind that gradually evolves into a condition wherein it is capable of making karma, and this conscious karma, this cause or causal karma, will produce a certain seed which is something like the result of karma, first in potent form, and gradually it will over time, either within a short period of time, within a few minutes, within a few days, within a few years, or over the course of several lifetimes, will bring forth certain results. And if we start to grasp what is implied by this dynamic, then we might get a conception of why Buddhists want to escape from rebirth, why Buddhists want to stop this process. Because this is an endless process that is continuously creating, modifying, and experiencing karma. So if we begin to realize this aspect of consciousness, this aspect of how consciousness in a sense creates its own reality and continuously reshapes it, if we grasp that, then we might get a glimpse of what enlightenment means and why people want to get enlightened, which is why the force of these ultimate truths, the fourth of these basic aspects of Buddhist philosophy, is Nibbana or Nirvana. Now, this is something that arises as a necessity of questioning life. Now, if you begin to realize that this process of karma making, karma shaping, karma experiencing is an endless process, naturally, after some time, you will ask yourself, where do I want to go? Now, what is the best aspiration? What is the best thing to do with that understanding? And now, if you go deeper into that question, what to do about this understanding, you will realize that whatever you can conceive of, whatever direction you want to gear your consciousness towards, whatever you aim to experience, all is going to be a construct, all is going to be something that you create, that you modify, and if you like it, you have to keep being busy in maintaining it and preventing it from falling apart. And whenever you fail to create your own reality, and whenever you fail to experience what you were aiming for and what you were hoping for, then you have to put forth even more effort to turn the process to your advantage again. So, and if you deeply look into that, and if you deeply realize that, then slowly the question arises, if there is something else, is there something beyond this process of perpetual creation and experiencing the destruction of the creation? And the Buddhist philosophers and the Buddha himself stated that there is something else. There is a state of peace. There exists a condition merging with which one can come out of this process. A condition which is utterly safe, a condition which is utterly free from that danger of falling apart again. And that is a condition that the Buddha was encouraging people to aspire for, because this is really the only safe haven. So I think for just explaining the basic ideas of the Abhidhamma, this might be enough, I hope, about the conditions that exists between these various phenomena, between mind and matter, how they relate towards what I called before the grammar of insight, that I will treat in some follow-up talk. So I hope that some of my listeners have gained something from this talk, some benefit, some growth of understanding. And with that, I end this talk.